So, as Sarah mentioned, the Arizona Cardinals officially visiting with Kyler Murray today. And
they got a meeting.
We'll find
not it. In a ladies' room. You know, a meeting in the ladies' room.
It's a song, yeah.
Oh. What's so...
Burns, try listening to music at some point.
Man, really. He just watches movies.
Okay, I'm looking
at
Jordan.
Are
you with me on this one, Jordan? I do not understand.
I know Brownsville Station smoking in the boys' room, but I don't know about this one.
Meeting in the ladies' room. Who is that, Sarah? Come on.
It's Climax.
Climax. Meeting in the ladies' room.
You've definitely heard the song. Would you like me to play some for it?
Go ahead. Give me 20 seconds.
We might have a YouTube ad.
Is it the clean version?
I don't think there's
who knows.
Is there an unclean version?
Look at Sarah.
Good question.
Look at
who
Sarah.
Cares?
Look at Sarah taking chances
who
with
knows?
Our careers.
All right. Do you remember the beat yet?
Of course Gampo would know this one.
Why?
Dance Party USA.
Yeah.
I had to leave my condo to come to this. Well, I'm back, but this time I'm with my man.
You better be careful with this one, Sarah.
I'm really taking a risk here.
Yeah, do I need to be worried about the lay here?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I'd hate to come back to this.
I can honestly say, okay, you can probably compot it down now. I can honestly say.
Wait for the chorus and then
play
it.
I'm not familiar with this song.
You'll know the chorus. Because I don't recognize any of this, but you know the chorus.
Okay. Yeah, me either.
It's still coming at some point in this 4-minute YouTube video.
You just crank it up when we get to the chorus.
Here she is.
I'll be back real soon. That's what I get for being in the neighborhood.
Got a meeting in the ladies' room.
Yes, yeah.
I'll be back real soon.
Yeah, no.
Can we talk?
No. What an unusual song for you to know, though.
I don't know. I know music.
What a very
you
curious
do movies.
Unusual
this is why
song
this show
for you
works.
To know.
You do movies, and I do music.
I guess.
You know every movie and every actor and everything, and I watch movies, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, I know that actor from somewhere, but I can't remember where. And we have to look it up.
Yeah.
Me and my wife spend all, we're on, every time we watch a movie, it's like, where, who is that?
I'm
where's
like,
that
I'm
actor
like a
from?
Walking IMDb page.
Yes.
That is true. But
yes.
I'm not familiar with that song. I don't know if there was a meeting in the
right.
ladies' room or not. I know
there
that
was
Kyler
a meeting.
Murray met with the Arizona Cardinals today in Oklahoma.
Yes.
I don't know if there was a workout. I don't know if it was coffee at Starbucks. I don't know if it was drawing up plays on the grease board. I don't know if there's going to be another meeting later, but they met, and we'll see if anything leaks out of that meeting and how things went. In the meantime, the Josh Rosen speculation, I'm not going to say it's a fever pitch because I think that would be a little bit of hyperbole, but it's growing. There's no doubt about that. I mean, to the point where there was a story in some of the New York papers today about how extensively the Giants did their homework on Josh Rosen a year ago as to whether they were going to draft him or not. Extensive pre-draft meetings, a visit to New York, a tour of the facility, all of that stuff. New York has emerged as a real possible destination for him. I mean, anybody at this point has emerged as a possible destination for him. I'm going to read this tweet.
Go ahead.
From Field Yates, who covers the NFL for ESPN. And he tweeted out, with the news the Cardinals are meeting with Kyler Murray today, any team acquiring Josh Rosen in a trade would be on the hook for 3 years, $6.24 million, both in cash paid and cap hits.
We've brought this up so many times.
For a potential starter and valuable backup. Every team should at least make a call to Arizona about Josh Rosen.
You're getting a top 10 quarterback with 1 year of experience for $6 million over the next 3 years. I mean, it's a steal if he's good. I mean, it's a steal if he's just average. And he just ends up being a backup. It's a steal. Now, you know, obviously, everywhere you turn, there's stories. The Miami Dolphins would have nothing to lose to call about Josh Rosen. There was another story. NFL teams are preparing for the Arizona Cardinals to trade Josh Rosen. Now, until I can link a team directly to the Cardinals, I'm not buying it yet. I'm not buying it. But this was a story. The NFL teams apparently believe Rosen will be shipped out of Arizona. The prevailing wisdom seems to be that Murray is a lock. Given what I've seen in the past few weeks, I would have to say that's what I believe will happen. This is what everybody believes, right? That Murray's going to go to the Cardinals. And that means that, you know, teams are preparing for Josh Rosen. Now, teams are still in the dark on the availability of Josh Rosen. This is from Albert Breer. But I'm told that that's not stopping them from getting their ducks in a row with guys who've worked with Rosen over the last few years, fielding calls and having discussions with intrigued teams, gathering background. So anybody that might have an interest in Rosen, although they're not hearing directly from the Cardinals or being told that the Cardinals are shopping him, there's a belief that they will at some point get there, and they want to be prepared and know what they're going to offer. Okay, I'm going to make an offer on this house. I want to do the comps in the area. I want to see what the area is like. I want to see what the school district's like. I want to make an offer to see if I want to buy that. That's what teams are doing. They're checking the comps. They're looking around. They're checking the salary is going to be $6 million. That's a positive. What do we have to give up? They're looking at all of these things to be prepared. So when that day comes, then I'm like, you know, we'll get back to you in 2 days. We haven't even thought about Josh Rosen. They're doing all the thinking and the research right now.
Jordan, if you could, you were one of the interns. Do me a favor and take a look at some of the big draft trades over the last 4 or 5 years. I'm kind of curious where in relation to the draft they actually happened. You know, how far out of the draft did the Rams move up to the number one spot? How far out of the draft did...
I mean, I have the Rams right now if you want it.
Do you have the date on it? I want the date.
Oh, the date.
I'm interested in it because what I want to know is when, based off of recent history, if a move is going to come down with Josh Rosen, when should we expect it? A week before the draft? 2? 4? When do these blockbuster sort of revealing trades about a team's intentions, right? Because the minute the Rams traded up
April
to number one.
14th with the Rams.
Okay, so
LA Rams trade up to acquire number one pick from the Titans. That was on April 14th.
Okay, so about 2 weeks before the draft.
The other one was Eagles, right? The Eagles trade up.
For Carson Wentz.
That was April 20th.
Okay.
Wait.
Jets and the Colts last year was March 17th. So right around this time.
The Bears didn't move up for the Trubisky deal until draft night, if I remember. The Bears were not until the day of the draft because they shocked everybody.
Back in 2012, when Washington moved up for number 2 to take RG3,
yeah,
that was March 12th.
Okay.
April 20th for the Eagles, April 14th for the Rams.
Okay.
Late.
But you see what I'm getting at?
Sure.
Okay, so today
it's a great way to look at it.
Today is March 19th.
Yes.
Typically, because if Josh Rosen does get traded, or if the Cardinals move the number one pick, now, these things might not happen until draft day, but I tend to think we're going to know beforehand, and I'm just kind of curious, if we use history as a guide, when can we expect a deal of that magnitude to go down? Because here's the thing, if you're the Cardinals,
but Rosen's different. In trading Rosen, it's different than moving up. You want to move up and you want to get that, you want to make sure you've got the number one pick. So the Eagles trading up to go up 6 spots, the Rams moving up 15 spots, that's all happening, but you know before the draft, because they need to know. Mm-hmm. They need to know, can I get this pick or not? The Rosen thing, I don't know. I mean, it's possible that could go down right on draft day.
It's possible. But if you're the Cards and you think there's a chance you're going to take Murray number one and you're going to move Rosen, you kind of like to know beforehand so you can fine-tune your scouting around that pick, right?
Okay, let's just
see,
say,
so let's say you trade him,
let's
for
just
the,
say New England offers the 32nd pick,
okay,
right? And the Giants are, listen, if we don't get the quarterback we like at 6, We'll give you 17 for Rosen, but we're not going to know until draft day.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can't get the guy we like at 6, then we will give you 17 for Rosen. Why the hell would you trade with New England until you know that you... I would tell New England, there's no rush. Let's wait. If we don't get a better deal, we'll make this deal with you. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I know exactly what you're saying.
That's the issue for me with Rosen, is I don't want to make a deal with New England for 32, and I could make a deal with the Giants for 17, and I screw that up because the Giants want me to wait because they might take a quarterback at 6.
Yeah.
And if they don't, then they'll get Rosen with the 17th pick. So that's why the Rosen thing could, and I'm not saying it will, it could go down
on draft day. It could go down a little sooner, right. Or you could have like an auction now and just, hey, highest bidder wins. A week before the draft, whoever's the highest bidder for Josh Rosen, you win, you get him for the highest draft pick that we could get, or
sure,
the highest combination of picks that we could get, if that's what you choose to do. March Madness Tips off on Thursday. With it comes your chance to be the Arizona Sports Bracket Boss. It's presented by Santan Ford and Schwartz Laser Eye Center.
Tonight? It doesn't tip off tomorrow night?
It tips off, technically, Thursday. It does tip off tonight. Madness tips off tonight.
And you just said Thursday.
Well, I should have corrected the buzz. You're right. Text BOSS to 620-620.
Hey, she's not going to be very happy with you.
No, they're really not. I couldn't even tell you the 16 matchup that's on tonight.
So you're not listening to my updates, huh?
No, I'm sorry. I'm not. Text BOSS to 620-620. Diamondbacks continue to trim down their Major League roster today. How many more decisions are left to be made before opening day next week?
We made a big cut today.
We'll ask the manager, Torrey Lovello. We'll ask him about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. D-backs manager Torrey Lovello joins Burns and Gambo to talk D-backs baseball.
Our weekly visit with the manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Torrey Lovello, as he joins us here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. They've got a night game tonight. Spring training beginning to wind down. Opening day just a week and a couple of days away.
I'm excited. Bought my tickets for opening day.
Looking forward to it. Torrey Lovello joining us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Torrey, how are you today, sir?
I am doing exceptional, guys. How are you?
Fantastic. We appreciate you joining us. Once again, we did this with you last week. You join us on a day when moves were made, including Yasmani Tomas, kind of the notable name being reassigned to minor league camp. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was those are tough conversations. They're tough days for us, the organization. But you know, we're drilling down to our team. We're drilling down to our 25 guys that are going to help us start off the season and push us in the right direction. Yasmani had a tremendous spring training, and that's where we're at right now. Some guys come in, have big camps, and you know, sometimes it fits, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it matches, sometimes it doesn't. In this case, we felt like Yasmani needed to go down and continue to work at first base, get some more time in left field. He's going to get some at-bats as a designated hitter, but he's got to hit the ball and he's got to continue doing what he was doing.
He did. I mean, he did hit the ball. I mean, he had a .448 average, 13 hits and 29 at-bats. His OPS was .1087. Offensively, obviously, he did what he needed to do. So what was the decision based on? Was it based on his defense?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right. He was crushing the ball, and the best part about what he was doing offensively is he wasn't slugging the ball. He wasn't just hammering balls and trying to hit everything over the fence. If you look inside of his approach, he was using the right side of the diamond, staying on the baseball, hitting all pitches in all directions. And to me, when a hitter's doing that, they're finally taking their swing and their collective baseball knowledge to the next level. That was a positive for Yasmani this spring training. As far as the reason why is that we have other first basemen that we're going to be counting on this year. I think the outfield play at times was okay, but it was still a little bit below our standards. So we need to see more of it. These types of situations at times are filled up with guys that have great camps, and we've got to look beyond just what the numbers are showing us offensively. We're also looking on the other side of the baseball. In Yasmani's case, we felt like more time at first base was needed. And the fact that he might not have just been having a great spring having a great month offensively, we need to see it for a little bit longer period of time.
I think we expected right about this time that you would be able to make a decision on who the closer is going to be with opening day inside of 10 days. Are you ready to announce who the closer is going to be at this point?
I can't right now because Archie was nursing a little bit of a stiff neck over the past 6 or 7 days, and he threw his first outing the other day. So that might have put a couple things on hold, not necessarily on hold, but backed him up by a couple days. But, yeah, I'd like to piece this thing together. I don't want it to be the 24th hour when we're having discussions with these guys. I want them to know so they can gain some comfort and knowledge about what their roles are going to be for this year's team. But we're having some good discussions about it, I will say that. I'm getting as much input as I could possibly get from all angles. And I'd like to do that as soon as possible. Just right now, because of what Archie went through, it might not be the best time for us.
So I'm by no means trying to pin you down to a certain day or a certain hour, but 3 days from now, 4 days, do you have kind of a window when you think you might want to be able to have those conversations? you like my contradictory question, Torrey?
I love it. I completely contradicted myself there,
but yes.
I love how you guys are. And I know everybody wants to know, and I want to know too. And I just haven't made that decision yet. I want to get some more information. So I don't know. It definitely won't be the night before opening day. We're going to have our team, our 25 guys, you know, a couple days in advance of opening day. And I'll have my discussions with these guys. So, I can't give you a window. Today's date is what? I think it's the 19th. And I know we hit the road and we head out to L.A. in the middle of next week to start our season. So, yeah, I'm not going to say exactly when that is, but it's not going to be next week. It'll be a little bit before that.
All right. How about this one? Have you made a decision on how many catchers you will carry?
We have not. I opened that up to discussion because I was asked that question in a scrum a couple days ago, and we have not made that decision. We are not firm with two or three. We walk through a bunch of different game scenarios. We try to get as creative as possible in our discussions with the front office and the rest of the staff about what the shape of a game will look like, what will happen in this case, and you kind of rehearse and play through any game and any scenario and any circumstance. And at that point, you weigh in as to what your needs are, whether you need a certain number of lefties in the bullpen, whether you need long men coming out of the bullpen, whether you need the five starters, but how many guys on your bench are you going to actually be using? So we have some very, very tough decisions that we need to make that are coming down the pipe here because we have good baseball players. And when you have good baseball players, you're forced to make these tough decisions. But we haven't firmed up everything. We had a number of send-outs. We got to that point today. The next step will be to form the 25 guys.
Troy Lovello, manager of the Diamondbacks, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Given the success that you have had with three catchers on the roster, would it have to be a pretty darn compelling reason to go against what has kind of been a staple of your tenure so far the first couple of years?
Yeah, for me it would be. I know that I've talked about not being so rigid and maybe making some adjustments and changing the playbook a little bit, but there's certain things that I know that work and I believe in, and this is certainly something that we've done over the past couple of years. It's been fantastic for us. So if we do flip the script a little bit, I've got to have a really, really good reason. And like I said, certain things I will still be rigid and stubborn to. This might be one of the situations because we know it works. It's worked for 11 of the 12 months that I've been here in Arizona. It was just that last month, obviously, things backed up on us. So why would I run from the things that have been successful for us? I need a good reason for that.
Jake Lamb not in the lineup tonight against the Padres. He's got that back issue. Are there any concerns there with that injury?
No. Minimal concerns for that. I got a chance to speak to Jake a little bit. He was in the training room, and he felt a little tightness during his swing. He had a good day yesterday. Felt good. We're going to let him rest up today, take batting practice, and hopefully get after it the day after tomorrow. We're starting to shore up pretty well with some of our injured guys. I think TJ McFarland, I explained to the guys, might not start the season with us. We might be running out of days with him. He's going to throw off the mound here in a couple days. We had some super-duper news today. The Taijuan Walker threw 20 pitches off the mound, which is the first time that he got on into live action, put the spikes on, and got on the rubber. So we're really excited for Taijuan. But the injuries happen at this time of the year. Guys get nicked up, and we're trying to make things happen the best way we know how. And in TJ's particular case, we still haven't gotten a game plan, but I just wanted to give you guys a heads up that we might be running out of some time with him.
I appreciate that. Torrey Lovello, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. With Taijuan in particular, is there any reason to believe that his timetable for a return is atypical for a Tommy John surgery, given what he did today for you?
Not at all. He's hitting every landmark and checked every box possible, and we're really excited about that. The one thing that we've learned is that when young starting pitching walks through this, you want to take your time with that. And Taijuan is he's such a young, talented guy. We would hate to force anything and push it too far too fast. We changed the clock a little bit with Shelby last year because we had a huge need for starting pitching, and it might not have been the best decision. Shelby ended up back on the disabled. So we feel like he's right on where he should be, and because he means so much to this organization, we might take our time and make double sure that he's ready to roll.
Last one for me before we let you go. Zach Greinke, I'm enjoying the kind of public dialogue, you and him talking about personal catchers and who it's going to be, whether he wants one, whether you should platoon guys based off of matchups. Is that something you're still committed to doing, or is that part of the flexibility that you were talking about a moment ago, that maybe you will go into it and he doesn't have a personal catcher, quote unquote, for 2019?
Yeah, I think, great example. I might not be so rigid if Zach is, really committed to being able to throw to one or two catch, or more than one catcher. That would be fantastic. Sometimes I have to look outside of things to help us score some runs so Zach can win the game. I just want to make sure that when Zach's looking down the gun barrel that it's somebody that he really feels comfortable with and is connected with. Zach's extremely unique in the way that he prepares and the way that he can execute. And it's like Picasso painting a picture. I'm sure that there was some frustration that he was dealing with, but there was a master plan, and if he got in the way of it, he would roll over you. That's how good Zach is. He is very good at his craft, and I'm still having these conversations with him as we're drilling down to what we do with that particular situation. I want to make sure I hit it right for Zach.
Torrey, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for joining us. We will talk to you next week.
I'll look forward to it. See you guys.
Torrey Lovello, manager of the Diamondbacks on the Coulter Automotive Group Sportsline, Coulter Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. Who's got the edge for tomorrow's ASU St. John's first four game? One coach who played both this season is weighing in and giving us his own scouting report for ASU versus the Johnnies. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, live from the Auction Community Studios. Thanks for hanging out with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Tomorrow, you'll hear ASU's first four game against St. John, 6:10 or so tip-off time. And we'll see if the Devils can go on to the first round of the NCAA tournament by winning the play-in game. Casey Jacobson was on Bickley and Murata today, the Pac-12 analyst. Says rebounding is going to be the key in this one.
To me, the key will be on the glass. So because St. John's is small, they rarely out-rebound their opponents. It was something that we constantly talked about when we were covering the Big East. If St. John's can compete on the glass, they usually win because they can control the tempo and they can get Shamori Ponds out in the open floor when they do that instead of taking the ball out of the net or giving up second-chance opportunities. When St. John's out-rebounded their opponents in the Big East Conference, which only happened 7 times in 19 games, including their tournament games, they were undefeated. When they didn't, they got smoked.
One guy who's uniquely positioned to be able to comment on this is the head coach of Princeton, Mitch Henderson, gave an interview to the New York Post. And the reason why he's uniquely qualified, he's played both. He's
yes.
coached against both this
he
year.
He lost to St. John's and he beat ASU.
Yeah.
So he had a lot of things to say about it. And he did a phone interview with the New York Post and he said the physicality of the game can't be a factor for St. John's, and Arizona State has to value the ball. But he went on to, say about Shamori Ponds, I would watch Ponds carefully. If he's able to dictate things offensively and they're playing free and loose, that's a good sign for them. When we played them, they shot the ball well. They had a lineup where they could shoot from all 5 positions. How is Arizona State going to guard that? There's another comment on there about ASU and how I think it was Dort might be a major problem.
Henderson went on to say about Arizona State that, quote, you've got to rebound. They're a very physical team. And then went on to say, I'm most interested in the Dort matchup. Who's going to guard him from St. John's? He's such a powerful kid. When you see him in person, you're not going to believe it, close quote. Now, we're used to it. We've been seeing it every single week.
Yeah, he's a physical specimen.
He is.
He's just a physical freak.
He's a monster of a man. I expect that he is going to be guarding Shamori Ponds tomorrow night. They're going to try to use him to shut him down because, as we spoke yesterday with the writer from the New York Post, the columnist, he said, look, they're going to go, St. John's is going to go as Shamori Ponds does.
Yeah, he's the best player
by far.
And
if you can shut Ponds down, you will cut the head off the monster, so to speak, and be able to control the game against St. John's. I would think you would take your freshman stud defender, Lucan Stewart, and you would put him on Shamori Ponds and try to get him to shut him down and take him out of the game.
Got to try not to get in foul trouble if you're Dort, though, because Ponds is quick, he's elusive, he's a playmaker, too. So you got to worry about Dort getting in foul trouble, because Ponds will go to the basket, he'll shoot, and, if he gets, and that might be one of the things Chris Mullen's looking at, is like, hey, I'll try to get him to the free throw line, I'll try to get Dort in foul trouble, because that's the one guy you got to worry about getting in foul trouble, because Dort's got the ball, and Ponds has the ball. He'll drive, he'll pull up, and if he gets a couple of quick fouls on you, that works to St. John's advantage.
I got this number off of, I want to make sure I credit this, because this is sundevilsource.com. We're actually going to have their lead writer, Chris Cartman, on in a little bit talk about this matchup coming up later on in the show. When Shamori Ponds gets more than 20 points in a game, St. John's is 11-3. When he doesn't, they're 9-8. As he goes, they go. If you can hold him to under 20.
He almost came out last year for the NBA draft. They told him not to, to stay in. They don't, I mean, they you know, again, they're small. They don't have any starters over 6'7", so they're small. They play in a good conference, but there are times they got just whacked, like, badly, and that's the thing, you know? I mean, Marvin Clark's not a bad player. Haran's not a bad player. But I think overall, I think St. John's has the best player. I think ASU has more talent.
Yes.
I think St. John's has the best player. And I think Pons is better than Dort. Pons is the best player. ASU's got more talent. They're probably deeper, too, when you got guys coming off the bench. So I think ASU, talent-wise, I would take ASU's talent over them. But if one guy can determine a game, they have the one guy that could determine the outcome of the game more than ASU does.
Right, here's more Casey Jacobson today with Bickley and Murata, his scouting report on St. John's.
You know, this is Chris Mullen, his first opportunity to coach in the NCAA tournament. None of these guys have NCAA tournament experience on his team. Mm-hmm. They're very athletic, but they play kind of positionless basketball. Arizona State is going to have their hands full with Shamori Pons. If you haven't seen him play at all, he's really good. A point guard who can score.
And as far as which Pac-12 team has the best chance to win a game in this tournament, remember Oregon as a 12 is taking
Oregon's
on Wisconsin as a 5.
Oregon's going down.
You think they're going down?
I don't think they beat Wisconsin.
Washington as a 9 is playing 8-seed Utah State. Then, of course, ASU versus St. John's. Here's Casey Jacobson on who he thinks has the best chance to advance. I bet he says Oregon. Let's see what he says.
I'm picking Arizona State. Yeah. I'm confident they're going to win against St. John, and that's one game. Oregon, I don't think that matchup is great. I think Oregon's good enough to win against Wisconsin, but I don't think that matchup is great. Because what does Oregon need to do? They need to force turnovers and get out on the open floor and create there. Wisconsin's a team that really takes care of the basketball. They love a slower tempo. There's going to be less opportunities for Oregon to do what they've done the last month of the season against Wisconsin, and Ethan Happ's a heck of a player. Now, is Kenny Wooten really good and athletic? Yeah, but Ethan Happ has gotten buckets against every player I've basically watched him against. So I'm not picking Oregon over Wisconsin in that first game. And then Washington, I'm not sure about. I'm pretty sure that Arizona State's going to beat St. John, so I'm going to go with the Sun Devils on
that. Okay, my bad. I thought he might have said Oregon, because I know he was very high on Oregon going in. Remember, we had him on the show going into the tail end of the Pac-12 tournament.
He changed his mind.
I thought he was higher on Oregon than he was, but he does not clearly like that matchup very much as all. I feel, I don't know, maybe I'm kidding myself. Maybe I'm hoping and not thinking. I'm pretty confident ASU's going to win that game tomorrow night.
They did struggle on the road. They did some win on the stretch. They did win some, but that was part of the problems was road. This is neutral site, of course. Yeah, I feel good about it, too. I mean, they've got – St. John's has a couple of good – Figueroa is not bad. Haran, not bad. But it's they go as pawns go. Every time I watch them play, it's he can will a team to victory. Like, if you go look at their victories over Marquette, Villanova, I mean, Pons has to play great for them, too. If Pons plays average, they don't win.
Mm-hmm.
They don't win. Now, just the thing about ASU is the thing you worry about with ASU is if they just have one of those nights where they're clanking everything and they just start clanking shots left and right. Now, the advantage for them on a night when they may not shoot the ball well is it's not like they're going up against a team with a bunch of 6'10 guys. 6'9", 6'10", 6'11", St. John's has no size. They've got to play position basketball for rebounds. They got a team rebound. So you might be able to miss some shots, get some offensive rebounds. I probably feel pretty good about ASU, too. I don't feel good about Oregon. I don't think Oregon beats Wisconsin. I just don't. And then the Washington game, I'm not really sure. I mean, that's a tough call right there. That game, I don't know yet.
Well, it's hard to know because Washington hasn't beaten anybody at all.
Well, they just got smoked in the championship game by like 20. You know,
go look at Washington's schedule, and there's no great wins.
Their coach was under Boeheim at Syracuse. He was like the guy that was going to be the the heir apparent. He was going to replace Jimmy Boeheim at Syracuse. I think he bolted there, went to Washington, and they've had a lot of success.
By the way, Bobby Hurley, according to CBS Sports Network, Remy Martin went through every drill today in practice.
He's playing.
Should be 100%. But I'm sure he's playing. It's a question of, what, is he 90%? Is he 80%? Bobby Hurley claims he's going to be 100%, or he should be 100% by the time the Sun Devils play the Johnnies tomorrow. So take that for what it's worth. We've got the Burns and Gambo podcast. If you want to listen to the show on your schedule, subscribe right now on your iPhone, your Android. You'll never miss the show. The Burns and Gambo podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer. NFL free agency period. It's slowed down a little bit. The Cardinals so far, how have they done? What else needs to be done? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. Pro Football Focus. The love-hate relationship. How we love you, how we hate you.
Isn't that most relationships, though? Like, love-hate?
I don't know. I love my wife. I do not hate her.
Oh, yeah, me too.
I love Jordan. I do not hate him.
Sometimes I hate him.
I'm learning to love Sarah. She's kind of new to the family. Well, I'm just learning to. You know, you're still kind of in the...
Yeah, tread carefully.
Yeah, well, except we're you know, but... You? I do not have a love-hate relationship with you.
No?
No.
Okay.
No.
You're one of the few.
Strictly hate.
Yeah, right? I guess that's, I'm just thinking me. Most people, it's a love-hate with me. It's, yeah.
Everybody likes you. I think you're reflecting everybody else's opinions on you.
On myself, yeah.
Towards everybody. What is that called? Projection? Is that what he's doing there?
I'm going to ask my wife when I get home tonight. Do you love me, or so do you sometimes hate me? Like...
I don't know if you should have that conversation with your wife.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think that'd be a healthy exercise for you.
I sent a nice little thing out today to my kid, went to spring training, got an autograph by Mike Trout. Some guy's like, yeah, dude, the only reason your kid got an autograph from Mike Trout is because your wife was standing behind him. If you were there, he wouldn't have got the autograph. I'm like, that's harsh. Like, that's very mean. I mean, Mike Trout's just a nice guy.
I'm sure he's just a nice guy.
Yeah.
Well.
What, if I was there, he would have just blown my kid off?
If it was you with your kid, I don't know if there would have been as sure a thing that the son would have gotten the autograph. I'm just saying. It might not have been as sure a thing. Mm. It's possible.
It's a possibility.
It's a possibility.
Yeah, that sucks.
One more thing. Anyway, where were we? Our love-hate relationship with Pro Football Focus. Sometimes we love them. Sometimes we hate them. And today we love them because they released their free agency winners and losers so far. And the Arizona Cardinals were one of their five winners. The Titans were a winner. The Chargers were a winner. The Jets were a winner. The Lions were a winner. And the Arizona Cardinals were a winner, in large part because of how they bolstered their defense with Terrell Suggs and Jordan Hicks. Didn't have a ton of positive things to say about the additions on the offensive line, at least from a wins above replacement standpoint, which they were kind of using as their metric.
They had competition in depth, but they've got guys, I mean... You know, that have had, I mean, I like the Sweezy signing a lot. I think he's a really good guard. I like that. You know, the other ones, you know, Max Garcia, I think he's going to be a good depth guy for them. The Marcus Gilbert trade. I mean, look, we all know this is pretty simple. When he plays, he's really good. And when he doesn't play, he doesn't play. Like, so it's like it's hit or miss. It's one or the other.
Yeah. And I think basically, and we've said this now for a while, free agency is basically a week old. Pro Football Focus was, we talk about love, hate, they were in love with Jordan Hicks. They loved Jordan
Hicks. I don't know how, like, we've had these roundtable debates, what's your favorite move? I honestly can't understand how anybody says anything other than Jordan Hicks. Like, I really don't. Like, Jordan Hicks is, like, okay, Terrell Suggs is a one-year guy and he's going to help. Jordan Hicks could be here for a number of years. He's your signal caller in the middle. He's a great player. By all metrics and barometers, when he plays, he's better than all the other guys. He's better than Quan Alexander and KJ Wright, and he's better than all of those guys.
But you just answered your own question.
When he plays?
You use the word win. When he plays.
Yeah, but Quan Alexander's missed a lot of games too. You know, a lot of these guys.
Well, that's the reason why they're available in free agency. It's just, I think part of the reason why there's been some hesitancy about fully embracing the Jordan Hicks signing is there is an availability question with him. There always has been. And when he's available, man, he's fantastic. He's great. He's an awesome player. I think that for others, it was, you know, they like the nastiness and the leadership that Terrell Suggs brings to the table. They like the, you know, Sweezy is a people mover. Isn't that the phrase you use?
That's
to
what I heard.
Him,
yeah,
right?
When I was talking with, you know, with Brock in Seattle.
Brock Huard loved him and didn't want to see him go. So I think it's kind of, it's in, and I guess that's the point. Free agency is in the eye of the beholder, and Pro Football Focus is going to give the Cardinals a really good grade in free agency because in their eye, Jordan Hicks is an awesome player. Bill Barnwell gave the Cardinals, what, a D for acquiring Jordan Hicks? And Bill Barnwell knows his NFL pretty well.
Was it a C-minus?
It was a C-minus or a D.
Might have been a C-minus because I was complaining about the grades.
Either way, it was not a glowing review. Now, same player, just looking at him with a different set of eyes and a different set of criteria. One man's...
Can I give you a reason for maybe considering the Cardinals a winner in free agency?
Sure, please do.
You know the Jason, the over the cap guy, Jason
yes.
over the cap?
Yes.
Teams with the most new fully guaranteed salaries.
Oh, I sent you this today. I'm glad to see you read my email.
I did. Teams with the most new fully... Now, the Cardinals signed a boatload of players.
Yes, they did.
I don't know that anybody signed more players than the Cardinals did. Number one, the Jets at $117 million. Lions at 81, Raiders at 69, Bills at 65, Jags at 58, Packers at 57, Broncos at 50, Ravens at 48, Eagles at 45.9. I just named the top 10 teams in fully guaranteed salaries based on what they spent in free agency. You know what team I didn't mention?
The Arizona Cardinals.
Not in there.
Nope.
They spent so they added all these players without giving out a lot of guaranteed salary. What does that mean? That means if you cut the guy, it doesn't kill you.
Right.
Okay, if you end up cutting a guy a year or two into a 4 or 5 year deal and he's got all this guaranteed money, it can bury you. It can bury you. And the Cardinals have a lot of dead money on the cap, so I don't want to say they don't. Right now, they do. But they've set themselves up for the future of not having the dead money hurt them as much because you look, the Jets, Lions, Raiders, Bills, Jaguars, Packers, Broncos, Ravens, Eagles, all these teams have spent a hell of a lot more money than the Cardinals have on fully guaranteed contracts.
On the guaranteed money that they've
given out. Yeah, I mean,
same guy, Jason from Over the Caps, put out a chart, and I counted 14 teams that have given out more guaranteed money than the Arizona Cardinals.
I didn't know how to read this chart.
With the dots?
I'm looking at it now. It's just like, I don't know. Like, I don't know.
I can show it to you during the break if you really want to know.
It's just like...
But there are four...
I almost feel like connecting the dots to see if it makes a picture of a tiger or a lion or something.
That'll muddle things. Don't do that. Now, one thing the Cardinals haven't done, and I will say, I'm sure you're getting the same thing. I'm starting to get a few tweets from listeners who wonder why the Cardinals have not done anything to address the defensive line. Our buddy Jess Root over at Cards Wire asked exactly the same thing in a story that he wrote today, that right now they've got three on the roster that are healthy and ready to go, four if you count Kamdichie, but he's not going to be ready to start the season. Switching back to a 34 defense, they're going to need a rotation of defensive linemen at different spots. They haven't added one yet in free agency, which is why our friends over at Revenge the Birds, they put together a list of guys the Cardinals still could potentially sign.
Rodney Gunter.
Four of them were defensive linemen. Rodney Gunter was one of them.
Still there.
Danny Shelton, Brent Urban from the Ravens, and Muhammad Wilkerson from the Jets. Four defensive linemen still available. They also listed Randall Cobb.
No.
Randall Cobb just signed with the Cowboys.
He's had the
1 year, $5 million deal.
The Cardinals had no interest in Randall Cobb. I've said this from day one. There was way too many concussions for Randall Cobb. That was not a guy they were interested in. The defensive lineman names, listen, they're not done yet. They're not. I said this the other day. They're not finished. They're still going to, now they're running out of money. Like, because they didn't have $100 million to spend. They were somewhere in the 35 to 40 range. And money to spend. So they are running out of money. So whoever they sign, it's not going to be a big name signing because they just don't have a lot of cap space left.
The Arizona Cardinals made a special trip today to Norman, Oklahoma. Was today's visit with Kyler Murray any further evidence that the quarterback is coming here to Arizona? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.